Welcome to the Technoid Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Today's show is sponsored by MB Real Estate. MB Real Estate has been a partner of Technoid for the last couple of years. They've helped us, our portfolio companies, all of us find great space. They're also, I believe, are a client. They're at least the person who introduced me to the guest on today's show, Marshall Seed from Ashling Partners. Conversation on today's show. First off, I preface the show by saying that I'm a little under the weather. I apologize if my voice sounds a little weird. I also was kind of laughing with Marshall at the beginning of the show because, as you know, as a listener of the show, I cannot pronounce names. And I refuse to let anyone give me the phonetical spelling of names. I'm not going to sound it out. I'm just going to work it out in my head, and it's not going well. So I'm very appreciative that Marshall's name was super simple, especially as I'm under the weather. I don't know why I'm making such a big deal of this other than to say I couldn't have picked a worse day to record with some of the best guests we've had this year and be under the weather. It's been a challenge, but I'm riding along with it. Talking about robotics and automation, if you haven't listened to the last couple of weeks of shows, you can tell that I have a very big interest in it, given the fact that we've had numerous guests in the space. We actually just talked about Uber Freight is one of them. We talked to a couple of robotics companies, and now we've got Ashling on. And the reason that I'm talking about it so much and the reason that I'm disappointed that I'm under the weather is that I really want to dig deep and go into this, because I think the root cause of all of the fear that people have around robotics and automation and artificial intelligence is that it sounds really scary, and it doesn't, it seems like you can't fully grasp the concept, and there's an information gap, a knowledge gap that's scary. And so we're not leaning into it and learning and being open to what it can mean for us from a advantage standpoint, but only just looking back at oh, this means the end of my job. And the reality is that's just not true. For some of you, it is true. I'm sorry. But for the majority of you, it's not. There's capabilities to make your job easier and to make you a happier employee by not having to do repetitive junk over and over and over again. And I just think that the more we talk about this, the better it will be for everyone. The more we understand the implications and not get ourselves tied up into what does 2050 look like? Let's just focus on 2020 to 2025. Let's get there. Because computers are still I still get fed random commercials on Facebook that make no sense to me. Now, part of that is Jen's fault because she picks up my phone and scrolls on Facebook and clicks on shit that I wouldn't click on. But the point is, it's not perfect. The algorithms don't know everything. Human beings still have context and empathy and have to make decisions that are not governed by the three laws. And until we get that ironed out, humans are a necessary component. And I think that the more we talk about this, the more people understand the opportunity in front of us, which goes to the other side as business operators out there listening to the show. The reason we have people like Marshall come on is that in my experience talking with even the most innovative companies, there's a complication around hiring consulting. There's this thought process that if I hire outside consultants, that means that my internal team's not good enough. And that's just not true. I'm hiring outside consultants because I want every opinion. The best and brightest companies hire the best and brightest people who want a broad scope of experiences and knowledge. And those are the best companies. Those are the ones that win because they want to work with everybody and they try everything. They're believers in open innovation. And one of the best partners out there is a new company called Ashling Partners. And that's why we had Marshall Seed on the show. And this is my conversation with Marshall Seed. I am absolutely thrilled to have you on the show for a multitude of reasons, none more than your name is Marshall, and it's just something that I'm not going to screw up. I have I don't know what's, I'm a little under the weather, which is not the listener's problem, although the sound might sound a little goofy, but I just with names, it does not matter what happens. I cannot do a name, so I'm just, thank you for having a name that is very easy to read.
Hey, I think you need it on the day you have the yips.
Yeah, this, yeah. Right? You, yep. That's, now I'm going to have the yips. You're right, though. I do. I have a name yips problem. That's a real thing. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff here. Last show, I guess I don't know what the last show you listened to was, so maybe it's not your last show. Last week, we talked a lot about robotics and sort of the automation new age and the use case for it and who's using it and when it makes sense and who's building it and who's the impact it has. And we talked a lot about Amazon's place in this world of robotics and how they have sort of moved the needle in a way that this was talking about shipping and retail, but mm-hmm. sort of the people didn't know that they had to have their package the same day. Like, it was like totally normal that you'd order something from Spiegel Outlet and it was, 10 days later you get it and like, that's normal. Mm-hmm. You have to order something in October to get it in Christmas time. Now Amazon is like, we're going to give it to you today, and we just worked shift after shift after shift of people until they figured out how to get, they acquired a robotics company and they got automation and line automation, and now all of a sudden they can do this. So there are key factors that are moving robotics and automation, and I think it's a fascinating conversation, I think, for a lot of people, because there's a fear factor mm-hmm. around it. And I want to talk to you about a lot of things, but I want to talk to you in particular about sort of how artificial intelligence plays a role and how people play a role and how, like, where you see this going and mm-hmm. what companies can do to stay ahead of the curve and what people should do to know, like, to not be afraid, or should they be afraid?
Mm-hmm. Well, sure. I think just kind of level setting up front, right? Yeah. There's more than one shade of robotics, right?
So yes. I did a very, very like yeah. straight razor there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I mean, it's all relevant, right? Yep. Because Amazon's using the Kiva system is what you're referring to,
correct.
Right? That's the robotic firm that they acquired.
Correct.
You have Boston Dynamics, you know, kind of out of that MIT network as well.
Yep.
But there's the underlying software and the AI you're referring to, right? Everything from computer vision, being able to triangulate like the human eye, more and more data points, so you're getting smarter as you're feeding algorithms that data. But there's the kind of the enterprise approach, kind of the white collar approach to robotic process automation. That's kind of what we represent, right?
Yep.
It's the software, right? It's actually not as scary as you think. I know that you had Sean from Catalytic,
yeah,
on it, and probably October,
yep,
ish timeframe on the podcast. And it's similar to kind of what Catalytic does, right? Except we represent a different part of the market, more on the service side and actually implementing and kind of operationalizing that for large companies, right? So for me, it's all about removing tasks that humans don't want to be doing anyways. It's yep. all about taking robots out of the human work, not having robots replace human work, right?
I think that's it's a weird, I don't know how to phrase this. There's a weird relationship there, because mm-hmm. people are afraid naturally of things they don't understand.
We fear the unknown.
Correct.
Right. Yep.
And you also, this is just my intuition, but I look at things and like, if you can solve the complication of the repetition,
mm-hmm.
and I hate my life because I hate my job because it's all repetition,
mm-hmm.
didn't you just replace me? And like, if so, couldn't you just do more? And then like, why me?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part I think that gets everyone down the rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
What they forget is, I mean, there are going to be some people who are going to lose their job. Like, that's just reality. But
there will be displacement for sure.
And that's yeah. been the case for the mm-hmm. existence of man. I mean, yep. the minute that there was a wheel, whoever the idiot who was lugging shit on their back is gone, mm-hmm. right? So like, immediately this is not new.
Right.
But I do think that we need to do a better job on the information side mm-hmm. and on understanding the like, a lot of the tasks that are done daily require a certain set of decision-making skills that require empathy and understanding of context that human beings at current can only mm-hmm. be the one, and it's decades out, maybe less, maybe more,
mm-hmm.
Before robots and automation can make those assumptions in a way that we would go with.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think there's a fear factor for those working today. For most of them. But I do think that I'd love to have you, if you can, in this capacity, talk a little bit more about like the overall capacities of the use cases of robotics and automation as you see it right now.
Well, I think the key term you just said there, Scott, is use cases, right?
Yep.
It's a use case driven technology that we represent, and you almost need to bring that into the foray in order to get people comfortable with it, right?
Oh, so, 100%. Yeah.
You know, we're working with, you know, B2B large corporations that, you know, frankly weren't born digitally, right? So they have the reality of having to deal with a lot of technical debt, you know, systems, mainframes, processes,
people. But they also have a lot of opportunities, mm-hmm. We're going to get into your yep. business side of this, but the
absolutely.
Fact that they, unlike those mm-hmm. that don't know their business, they know their business.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They do, but it doesn't mean you know that you're doing it the best way,
correct.
Right? And so to your point, like we just use use cases, right? Let's talk about all the time you want to do doing strategic analysis of your vendor community, of your your financial close process, whatever that horizontal business process might be. And let's actually measure how much time you're actually spending doing it, because you're probably actually spending 80% of your time chasing down vendor paperwork and W-9s and all of this data collection, data input, and data entry. You're not spending your time on critical thinking and data analysis. I mean, a lot of people have said this before, but it's still not a reality, right?
Oh,
people
totally.
People are not. It's flipping the 80-20 Pareto principle, right? And people are still 20% doing strategic thinking for their organizations and themselves, right?
It's funny to me, and this is, we're going off the rails in this part of this conversation.
That's
but
what this is all about here.
Yeah, that's, I mean, this show should be called Ruby Off the Rails. Mm-hmm. That's what it should be called. In fact, someone write that down. That's a new domain that I'm about to acquire on GoDaddy. The thing here that is interesting to me is people, and I mean, I get it. People complain all the time about the repetitive nature of work and that it sucks, and yet they gravitate towards it,
mm-hmm.
and they gravitate towards not having to be critical thinking, and it's sort of like, well, let's see, I went to the Hawks game tonight, so Wednesday, let's spend the first 9 hours of the day just kind of thumbing through paperwork, and so it's like when you get rid of that,
yeah.
or at least a portion of it, mm-hmm. like there's going to be more that you're going to need to do,
mm-hmm.
or at least more critical stuff.
Well, there's no question, right? It's a security blanket, right?
Yeah.
As much as you say you want to change and you want to add value to the organization, you know,
the winners are going to be revealed.
Yeah, change is great until it happens to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's how a lot of people feel, right?
So true.
And what this automation era, a lot of people are calling this automation first. You know, we had the mobile first era, and then we had
we need to come up with a new term.
I agree. I think it's a little scary. I think it's a little scary.
There's a... Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I think
there's
words
no I
matter.
In automation.
The second you get into automation and AI, people do get scared because it's a little harder to grasp and understand. You think it's like this magic button that's happening behind the scene. The second you start to kind of break out the fact that it's like business rule driven, right?
Yep.
There's logic behind it. There's variables behind it. That's when they start, you know, being willing to kind of grasp and say, well, this would be great if I could do this and then augment my time over here so I can, you know, dedicate 10 extra percent over here. And really, it's business leadership that needs to support that mindset, because they need to come out up front before you start down this journey or venture. A lot of times it happens as a part of like a digital transformation discussion, which is that and AI are the most overused terms in the market nowadays, right? And you need the leadership to come out and say, this is about productivity and repurposing work and creating more meaningful contributions of your work, as opposed to headcount reduction, which is the 800-pound gorilla that's always in the room, right?
So I think, you know, I think we talked about this on the podcast with Sean from Catalytic about the fact that this is like deep into the weeds of like people, again, use case of people actually using the technology that we have available.
Yep.
That your the best analogy, I always try to bring things into like a physical nature because you can visualize it, you can see it, and it's like, all right, I get it. Mm-hmm. You've seen exoskeleton robots, right? And they're on construction workers or they're on military personnel, and you can see them lifting things that are way heavier than the human body is supposed to lift. This is the mental version of what is being created. Mm-hmm. The opportunity to go through your workday where you don't have to go, oh, geez, I think I just read this email. I got to go scroll back. If you could get rid of the monotony of that, mm-hmm. and I could make your job easier so you could get more done, the lazy people are going to hide in the mailroom are going to hide anyway. For the people who are trying to get through the workday, and I could give you AI, which is a lot of reasons that CRMs and things like we've used.
Absolutely.
Obviously, ActiveCampaign for us. But like those CRMs enable me to pull up information in real time, which is why it's so beneficial. If you can have these kind of tools that you're ready, your job would be easier and thus your job satisfaction would be. It's not that they're going to give you more work. Mm-hmm. You would just be more diligent in your work.
I absolutely agree. I think it's more about you know, being the operator of the technology as opposed to becoming a slave to the technology.
Correct.
Right? It's the exoskeleton construction example you gave, right?
Yep.
I mean, that is operating based on a human operator and, you know, logic and programming that was done by a, you know, computer scientist of some sort, right? So, I mean, the human is creating the technology, and, you know, my perspective and most folks that come on board at Ashland Partners are really focused on being optimists. Like, let's get ahead of the curve. Let's be proactive, and, you know, let's enable this technology to give ourselves, you know, more meaningful work and more productivity and more time to go to the kids' soccer game. Right?
I don't think that the people listening to this show are of the nature that they are not proactive.
Mm-hmm.
I think the general person who listens to this show is probably pretty like pro tech, just I'm just guessing, or at least the multi-time listener. And I just have this belief in it. I think this is an interesting moment for people as they start to scale their companies, whether it's a startup or in this particular case, SMBs and other businesses that are sort of legacy. Hiring people who are averse to change and trying new things and adopting things with a pessimistic attitude versus an optimistic. I think I just don't have any place for it anymore. I think that we're in a position where you've got to be learn first, learn ready, read ready. Like if you're not that kind of person, I think this is a great opportunity for companies to weed out some of the low performers because of the fact that they just don't want to optimize. And like a lot of companies in the past could crutch on saying to their board, we can't make this transition because the cost is going to be too high. And now the cost of not making this change is so ridiculous that you can no longer say with a straight face to your board, like, yeah, we're just going to keep a status quo because these guys don't want to change. Like, I think that is, you are the last CEO in the room, I think, at that point.
I totally agree. I just look at internal. I'm not even looking at, everything you're saying is correct externally, right? We see it every single day with the movers and shakers of today compared to yesteryear at large Fortune 500 companies, right?
Internally, how many CEOs left this year? And then there's other reasons for some of them, but like, for a lot of them, it's not that. It's stagnant growth because they're not adopting to the way that consumers shop and use their product.
Yeah, or they had a huge customer experience campaign, or they started an innovation garage or something, and it really didn't actually produce any type of business application or ROI back to the organization, right? But I think the other point that you made, Scott, is huge for us. We call that the concept of the versatilist, right? It's not lip service in a recruiting pitch anymore to say we need lifelong learners. Yep. Like that's a protection of our business investment because, yes, you will have a major. You might be a .NET or RPA developer, or you might know Python and R, or you might be more steeped in data visualization and analytics and big data. Whatever the case might be, you better cross-pollinate. Yeah. You better understand upstream and downstream impact. Gone are the days of being a database specialist for 30 plus years and being okay with that, right? You can't do that now. Companies can't afford to just have that type of specialist.
Well, just a minute ago, we just had the fellow on from Uber Freight.
Sure.
And he was working on Uber's rideshare business before he skipped over to Uber Eats, and now he's at Uber Freight. Like, that's his background was neither of the three. I don't know if neither is the right word there, but that's the word I use. Yeah. You have to have versatility. Your information understanding has to be context of the business model, the team, what makes the team go forward, where are we going vision-wise, and then after that, it's just like operational expertise. Like, what do you do? Mm-hmm. What do you do for us?
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to give you all the tools to do amazing things, but you need to focus on you.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little conservative in some of the things I hear about. Like, I've been a part of like the agile transformation era and all that, and it's very important to get product out to market quicker. Knowing that, you know, I run a services organization that works with world class products, right? But we still run like kind of like a product management organization. You need to move fast and fail quickly and all of that, but you can't just keep on failing, right? You have to kind of do work at the edge of the box because that's where work actually gets done. That's where innovative work gets done. You can't be too far outside of the box because it won't get funded or people will, you know, force you into an island and say that guy's crazy, mad scientist in the innovation garage.
Yep.
But you can't be too far in the box because that's not real change, right? Yep. So it's automating a bad process. That's doing an extension to your CRM system where, you know, everybody else is doing the same thing. It's keeping up with the Joneses, right?
I'm with you on the whole I've had enough of the fail fast thing. I'm not saying
you don't want to fail though. I mean,
that's not the
idea. Like, let's not like crucify you for it, but I mean, I'm telling you, we're bootstrapped. We don't like failing.
I think I'm open. I mean, this is a good time to put it there. Like, I'm not saying I'm open to failure. I'm not really open to failure, but I'm open to decisions that have a high risk.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm not going to, unless it's going to break me, I'm probably going to have to consider it. But otherwise, I'm open to high risk, but I'm not open to not taking risk, put it that way. But I also am not open to knowingly continuing the pursuit of something that all signs should have suggested don't.
Mm-hmm.
And like you're doing it because you're like, well, we have to like fail. It's like, no, you knew that this was a bad time to take this to the market. You knew you weren't ready. Mm-hmm. Just table it. Like, it's fine.
No, I'm with you. I think just real quick tangent on that, because this is something that we talk about all the time, because people, you know, a lot of people from, you know, the fast high tech space, the VC funded
space. The ones
that
are out there with like a mic taped to the side of their face mm-hmm. are actually just doing a really large video job interview.
Mm-hmm.
That's totally. What they're doing.
No, you're absolutely correct, that. Right? And they're doing it with other people's money. Right?
Yeah.
And that you need to do that to grow fast, right? I'm not discrediting that.
Yeah.
I think the reality is it's what we call bullets versus cannonballs. You know, it's a Jim Collins concept.
Yeah.
Management guru. And he's like, why would you, the scenario is you only have a limited amount of gunpowder and you're on a ship and you have an enemy ship approaching, right? Why would you waste all of that gunpowder on one cannonball when you could have taken just very small components of that gunpowder, shot some bullets to kind of get the right trajectory, calibration,
yep.
all that, and then feel comfortable about it in the cannonball. So that's what I'm saying. At the edge of the box, like let's do things with intent, right? Let's try things out, innovative things. Let's make sure we understand the definition of success. Maybe we're okay with this if this doesn't work out because it might help an adjacent service offering your product, right?
I am a huge fan of I call it the if then.
Mm-hmm.
It's every single, and it kind of came from a derivation. I used to do stand up stuff and improv. It was yes and mm-hmm. like I get that too, but like sometimes no is good. If then is like I have a premise. This premise, and people on the show, founders of early stage companies, get really pissed at me because I call their companies projects all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a project mm-hmm. until not. I mean, it literally, like, you've got to prove that there's a demand. You've got to prove that the idea is viable. You've got to prove that it's desirable. You've got to prove that it can be done. Like, can it actually work? Like, how much money is it going to... Like, you need to prove all these things out. And I think creating micro tests of what you're doing is totally smart and fine. And I don't care if you wreck those. But when you just go, we're going to sink this budget and go. I just don't get that. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it is... You know, the startup, a lot of times, and this is just nature. Startup founders, not all of them. In fact, actually, if you look at Kauffman Foundation's reports on this, they average founder, successful founder, which success is a metric that's sort of subjective, but is like 36.
Mm-hmm.
So for the people who have raised over $1 million and change and they've built a business and revenue and so forth, I think most of them have had more experience in business. But a lot of the founders that we know of are the college dropout or whatever mm-hmm. that like has been made famous on Instagram. They don't have any business experience. And so mm-hmm. they just throw shit at the wall because that's what they know. And then the businesses, the legacy businesses don't have any experience in an agile world. And so they're taking from their kids, literally sometimes their kids who are the ones throwing stuff at the wall in the basement. And they're like blending the two. When in reality... That's like not, it should be like just, if only the two would work together,
mm-hmm.
we'd have a lot better success rate.
Yeah, I would totally agree. And if those stats are accurate, I'm good then because I'm right within that demographic.
No, yeah. So, I mean, so like talk to me now about Ashling and what you guys do and how this whole thing works.
Yeah. So Ashling Partners, so I am one of two co-founders, the other co-founder being Don Sweeney, also Chicago based. We actually met at a consulting firm that he ran for 19 years here. And we came from, you know, the big monolithic enterprise application ERP era yep. where, you know, you did
such fun.
Yeah, it was not a bad time,
no.
was, I mean, it's a thing of yesteryear, in my opinion. Yep. And so we were basically searching for something new, right? And so I left after we were acquired and went out and did some advisory work. I was at Gartner for a few years, just not a bad
just
place.
Just traveling the world, getting paid well.
Biggest IT think tank, you kind of see some of the trends coming potentially, right?
It's a good job.
And so we got back together when this whole RPA concept really came into the market, right? It's you could still consider it emerging technology at this point.
Yeah.
To us, since we do it every day, we think it's pretty mature, but you know, it really had a lot of the missing links for us, right? We always wanted to focus on business outcomes and having a strong business case for why we're doing a technology project, because an enterprise technology, you know, unlike consumer tech, it's not about fads, it's about bottom line and top line contribution, right? Those ERP projects and those process reengineering projects, nobody cared by the end because everybody was so damn fatigued after many years of kind of being in project trench warfare, if you will, right?
Yep.
You know, the other piece is, you know, this whole future of work thing, right? That's big for us. We think this is a vehicle for that. We think this is kind of like the injection into the arm to actually rethink work the way we would want to do it. We all say we want to make a meaningful contribution. Every employee experience survey ever gone out there, you know, starts this way. Do you want to make a meaningful contribution? Do you spend most of your task and time doing meaningful things? And it's yes, no, yes, no. That's always the response, right? And so we see this as kind of a point of entry into kind of starting to recreate that future of work. It's the whole thing that Sean talked about, right? Let's automate manual, repetitive, high volume tasks that are, you know, very scripted by nature, and let's focus our time elsewhere, right? For every stat there is about job loss, there is stats about meaningful work contribution and scarcity of workforce and the baby boomer generation causing huge gaps in our workforce and headlines from Japan about how the prime minister thinks that automation and specifically RPA is actually a national crisis and a national need, right? Yeah. So all those trends kind of came together for us, and we started Ashling, and you know, we kind of want to stay a service organization because we're seeing how fast the technology is moving, and you need a myriad of technologies to orchestrate together to really kind of make this work across business processes and across processes you don't even classify as a process today, but that you're doing as an organization. And so we got really excited when RPA came onto the scene, because that was kind of like, if there was a silver bullet for us, that was a good point of entry to, you know, kind of seeing this new vision. And that's what Ashling stands for. It's Gaelic for vision, right? So that's the whole point of the whole firm. So
why do you see it as the silver bullet mentality to that? What about that makes it stand out?
Honestly, for our space, it's attention. It's not the silver bullet in actuality,
yeah.
but from a headline perspective, you know,
it gathered everyone's eyes. They like see that there's a real thing here.
The C-suite for a long time has been trying to figure out, well, how come my IT organization seems to be slowing me down when I hear about, you know, Mr. CFO at my competitor talking on their shareholder report, shareholder call, you know, all the great stuff they're doing with automation and, you know, blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
Some of that is, you know, just talk, right?
Yep.
But the other piece is there's always been this misnomer that IT is slowing us down, right? This technology is a little more rapid development. You can put it in the hands of the user a little more, not to the extent that a lot of people would like to believe, but it really at least gets the conversation going. And what ends up happening is you start to introduce this technology to your people, to your processes, to your current technology landscape, and it acts as like an X-ray,
yep,
to everything that's inefficient about your process. So it's not just, well, I got to fix that process, then automate it. I've got to re-engineer that process with automation in mind, right? And the customer experience in mind up front.
Yep.
So that's a total shift. It used to be either or, like Lean Six Sigma used to do that, then technology, right? That's not the case anymore. And so that's kind of why it's a point of entry. It's kind of a tip of the spear discussion, right? And that's what we were looking for. We just wanted to have that relevant conversation.
I tend to agree with you on this. I mean, I think, as a person who spends some time working with small businesses and even large businesses on the consulting side of things, one of the challenges that I ran into kind of quite frequently, and I think it's, I don't know that there's necessarily a silver bullet solution, but I do think that you guys are kind of on the right path, mm-hmm, of this, because most companies, depending on what their core competency is,
mm-hmm,
technology and staying cutting edge, and really even more importantly, like bug technology, like being a test and actually like implement things that are not glitchy, is not their core competency.
Mm-hmm.
And usually they have contracts ongoing with agencies or other people who they work with, technology vendor partners, or out of the box stuff that they buy, or hired developers that they put into a team that used to be their innovation squad and, mm-hmm, now they're whatever they are. They're directed by people who are still trying to reinterpret history for the future instead of build the future fresh,
mm-hmm,
and like looking at the map like with a clean set of eyes. And what happens is they get themselves tied into a knot that there's no one there to fix.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, because their agencies that they work with and their vendors are just trying to hold on to the relationship, they give them bad advices or they give them limited scope because, oh, this is all we can do. And then instead of trying to take on a new partner or add something complex, they just go, okay, fine, we'll just go with this because this is what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
And then they talk to Frank and Frank says that's what he can do. And instead, you work with a partner like you who's like, there's a myriad of options.
Mm-hmm.
You could go this way or this way or this way. We could do this, or we could partner with this group to do this for. Like, you are the brains, the eyes and ears of what's out there, and can take these things and bring them to your customer and go, here are your options. Here's what we should do. Here's what you should look at first. Here's what I would not do. And I think that there's a conversation here now that it's warm and welcoming versus even like 5 to 6 years ago. I feel like it was a very difficult conversation that there was sort of like, well, if it's this layered already, how much crazier is this going to get? And it's mm-hmm. like, all right, well, pessimist, not yes. good.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think I think there's a couple things to unpack there, actually.
Yeah.
So first and foremost, I think there's another misnomer, right? I think people don't think you can be a service provider and a growth company,
yeah.
which I actually disagree, especially you have to go through a full economic cycle to really see this come to fruition, in my opinion, right? So we can pivot very quickly. And the reality is, do you want a tool as a customer and a client or a large institution, or do you want a capability, right? If you want a capability, you need to work with external providers that get the landscape, can implement, can plan, can prioritize, can help you sustain and kind of in that run cycle. Because if you want a tool, you should just work with SAP,
yep.
Salesforce, Oracle, Workday, right? From an enterprise technology perspective, those are the monolithic suites that are accepted, right?
Yep.
You're not going to get fired. It's the old blue mentality. You're not going to get fired for hiring IBM. That's probably not as normal nowadays as it was 20 years ago. But, that is a tool, a suite of tools. It's not necessarily orchestrating a capability that directly contributes to a bottom line or top line strategy, right?
So, totally.
So, I do think you still, we see it every day, especially in the upper Midwest, right? We got a lot of manufacturing Rust Belt folks. John over there is the one only person that understands our AS400 applications,
yep.
right? We don't know what John's going to do when he leaves, and like, well,
shouldn't
there be a sense of urgency at this point, right?
Yeah.
Shouldn't that be like a crawl, walk, run? Like, let's figure out that system first, and then. Layer in some of these cool stuff we're doing with APIs and all that later, but
it's just not the approach that they take. And I think having someone who has more of a layered understanding mm-hmm. of things is helpful. What do you think is the most exciting thing that you guys are going to get to work on that you are most excited about with this company?
Well, so I think, well, number one, I love the folks that we bring on, right? Because a lot of them come from like, we give a different alternative, right? It's not, Big Four consulting,
yep.
right? It's a lot of those folks with that pedigree, but they wanted an alternative that was focused on outcomes with our clients, not on how many hours did you build, right?
Yep.
Like that's not so. I love the internal piece of it. From a market dynamics perspective, I think when we look at what can be automated, right? The issue is that there's a bottleneck, and we all know that roughly 80-85% of enterprise data is semi or unstructured, right? It's in a PDF, it's in a contract, it's in a lease, it's in voice, right? Unlocking that is very intriguing to us. So there's this huge content intelligent data capture wave that's taken place. We work with some of those technologies. That's really exciting, right? Some of the technologies we work with in the RPA space specifically are extending capabilities. Ultimately, everybody wants to be doing AI,
yeah.
right? But you need data that is clean, that has a certain amount of integrity and volume, and that has a certain amount of variety to train machine learning algorithms, right? And so we want to get there. We're doing some of that in very specific use cases. But the reality is we need clients to go through process automation so that we can do more of that advanced targeted AI. And, anybody that says they're doing it full blown is a liar, in my opinion. At least from a business context, right? Unless you work for like a video game company or something, you're not truly doing, kind of deep learning with business context in mind.
Correct. Yeah.
That's my experience.
I would agree with you. And I think the part that I'm particularly excited about is, I don't know why I nerd out on this. I've talked about it on the show a couple of times, but the interface for audio tech.
Yeah.
And like audio voice command mm-hmm. and like what that UX is going to be and like how to make a UX for audio for voice command that works with other people. Cause like I feed you an iPhone mm-hmm. and like, you can look at whatever this says my protocols are and like, you just sort of follow it. And so do the billion people who have an iPhone, they follow
right.
it. Audio is sort of a mental visual.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, it's going to be different from me versus you versus you versus you. And so how we integrate that, like that, I think that's one of the reasons why you saw this gigantic influx with like Alexa and Google Home mm-hmm. and Apple HomePod, whatever. I don't even think it counts. And Siri.
Yep.
They all sort of do one thing, but not two things, not three things. Mm-hmm. And then they sort of like sit there dormant.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just not there yet. But I think it's going to be gigantic. And I think that when you put in, I think that the whole full circle comes in when you get the audio voice command down with the automation robotics component where human can speak with and direct order to in workflow time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the part I'm most excited about watching.
No, I think you're spot on, Scott. I got a perfect example, right? So one of our lead consultants, he was hanging Christmas lights on Saturday night, and he unfortunately had an awful fall off his roof, right?
Yeah, that's really not good.
Yeah, and it wasn't like a Clark W. Griswold fall where he fell in the bushes and everything was okay. Like, I mean, he broke one arm, and then he broke three fingers on the other. So he's literally in two casts right now. Yeah. So we spent, you know, Sunday and Monday morning trying to figure out how he's still going to do some of his work using voice translation, right?
And yeah,
he couldn't even figure out, like, we couldn't even kick off our Zoom meeting using, you know, voice commands. So everything you talked about with Alexa and HomePod and all of that, that's consumer tech, right? When is that going to cross the chasm into enterprise tech, right, and B2B tech?
Way far away.
Just doesn't seem to be right there. I think chatbots and conversational AI is creeping up, but you need the organizational change control to be there and user adoption.
I think it's going to pick up speed quickly when it does turn that corner. I just don't know where the corner's at.
I'm with you, man. I think there's a huge potential there, and it's just a matter of, you know, testing that out a little bit at organizations and then, you know, kind of like a flywheel feeding it back in, right?
This conversation is the reason that companies need businesses like Ashley.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not having this conversation internally. Most companies are not sitting around going, what do you think voice command's going to be? Like, that's just not, like, that's not what, but that's not their job.
Right.
That's your job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I think this is just another example of why these companies really, I think you're going to start, you know, this is going way back into another bag of conversation, but, you know, open innovation was a conversation that when I first started my consulting business was not acceptable. There was very little collaboration. There was very little openness to open source or to like the idea that Tesla puts most of their battery technology just out in the world and says, like, please break.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for me, it's good for you. I don't know why that became a Russian accent, but it did. I guess I was thinking of SpaceX, which is also not Russian, but space. I don't know. I digress. The point is, open innovation is something that changed fundamentally the way and the speed in which companies can grow. First, it was, you know, growth companies. Then it became mature companies and how they could excel. And I think that as we start to enter this world of working with multiple vendors and non-exclusives and having patent partnerships, I think is sort of like the next wave, because there's just too much stuff to be awesome at, to be great at everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't have partners who are working on this so that they can work with this, and if you can't work with them, then I think you're going to be out.
No, I'm with you. Coopetition is the new norm, right?
Yeah.
And lines are blurred.
I like that. Hashtag that.
Well, I mean, a lot of our partners are, they were kind of in their lanes even just 6 months ago, and now those lanes have blurred and swerved into each other.
Is there a better conversation than when you go pitch one of those people, like, let's say 3 or 4 years ago, and they're like, no, garbage. And then you come back to you like 6 years later, like, can I come to your lunch? Yes, you may. You may.
I wish I could act like I remember anything from 6 years ago, but yes.
On a binge? What's going on? No, I'm just kidding. No, this is very fascinating. Where do people go to learn more about it?
AshlingPartners.com. That's AshlingPartners.com.
You are feeling better than I am, because I couldn't read anything at this point.
You know, I was like, am I going to mess up this spelling?
No, you got it. You nailed it. You nailed it. Marshall, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for coming in.
Appreciate it, Scott.
Of course.
Thank you.
If you've got any startup questions you want me to answer or take a stab at, DM me on Instagram or Twitter at TechNori or at Katoon. To invest in featured startups or apply to pitch on the Startup Showcase live on WGN Radio, go to TechNori.com. Boom. That's a wrap.